to the First 7-Inch Club, episode 37. Each episode on this podcast, we dig up a 7-inch by a forgotten or obscure band within the realms of hardcore, punk, and metal, and discuss whether or not they're worth being remembered. We'll also provide factoids and trivia that we glean from the internet and our own personal experiences. We are not pro-musicologists, so sometimes our research is a little off. You just have to take it with a grain of salt. We're just two dumb guys talking about old ass records. Yeah. And I am Mike, and you might notice I sound very smooth today, and that's because I finally got a new mixer. I got the same mixer Scott has, and Scott is right here with me. What's up, Scott?
I wanted to bring us up to date on a little nugget I found that it's actually kind of old. So, you know, a while back, my friend Eric and I were considering doing a band about the horrors of being fathers, and we were going to call it Extinction Burst, because that's like a partly a parenting term.
Okay.
It's not as brutal as it sounds, but it's like it's a parenting term. So we never got around to that. And now there's a label out there called Extinction Burst. So we snoozed and we loosed. We don't get to use that anymore. But in researching this record, I came across that label. And it was started by a member of Steve Aoki's old hardcore band Esperanza, who we talked about on... whatever that label was, Stick Figure, whatever.
Yeah.
So that label, Extinction Burst, about a year ago, put out a whole Esperanza discography with like a huge deluxe booklet. Like that's real. They really pulled out the taps. I'll leave it up to the listener whether Esperanza, this screamo band from the 90s, deserved a deluxe anthology treatment, like this, you know, Impulse Records box set type treatment or something.
Is there any other way that Extinction Burst could be a term for anything else except for being a dad?
I think it just means anytime that you mess up a habit. Like it's like if you've done really well for like years at something, and then you do the one thing that messes up the habit, like smoking a cigarette or something like that.
You know? It could just be like a break and edge record label then.
Yeah. It could be something like that. Okay. For parenting, it means like you sleep trained your kid or something, and then you gave in one night and went in and cuddled them and you fucked it up, and now they're going to grow up all shitty.
Okay.
So, if you go to the Twitter for that label, there's a video of Steve Aoki flipping through the deluxe booklet and reminiscing about his hardcore days. And I don't know much about Steve Aoki other than he's a big name, like name brand celebrity. So I thought it was pretty fun to watch this because he's stoked about hardcore. This is like some legendary. I mean, do you know anything about him? I mean, I know he's like a producer.
He's a DJ, and like he just has an unimaginable amount of money now from just his various ventures. He does like, I don't know if he still does them, but for a minute he was doing unboxing videos of like $30,000 boxes of Pokemons,
wow,
cards and stuff like that. Awesome. Just like, oh yeah, just doing shit like that. I think he had his own, I think, Topps brand cards that they released, and just he's just like all over the. He has his own pizza places.
Oh, wow.
Steve Aoki Pizza. Cool. Yeah, he's just a mogul now.
Well, you know, watch the video because it's fun. He's stoked to have been on a comp with Limp Wrist. You know, and we know a member, at least one member, two, a couple members of Limp Wrist. We're friends from Albany. He's bragging about touring with Tragedy. So, you know, track it down because it's weird. It was weird because I know that he's this pop culture saturation, like EDM or whatever person. And he's like excited about screamo. It's a strange thing to see. Late last week, the Reunited Dead guy announced that they had found a song on a cassette, a song that they recorded during the work ethic sessions and a white meat work ethic sessions, and that they're going to impress that on a 7-inch along with a slightly different version of Die With Your Mask On. You can get this record as a limited edition sea glass colored vinyl with a zine documenting the band's reunion show, or you could just get the record in yellow with no zine, the poor man's version, the shit version. Mike and I both made fools of ourselves Friday. Blowing up Mike's spot. I don't know if we wanted to admit this to people, but we both spent $31 a piece, cold American US dollars, to buy the deluxe edition, which as of this recording is sold out, but I think you can still get the shitty yellow version. And it's going to be about $16 or $17 to just get the record if the shipping is similar. Also, I believe that the yellow version is more rare. Like they made less of the yellow, so that's actually probably the fancier one. Mike, up till this day, one of my biggest musical expenditure complaints has been that I begrudgingly bought a $50 180-gram vinyl version of Faith No More, Angel Dust because I asked our buddy Claw to hold it for me online, and then I didn't have the stones to flake when I saw how much it was, so I had to buy it. I think spending $31 for one song takes the top slot now, I think, because this song is going to be on YouTube. It's already partially on Instagram now. It's going to be on YouTube for free any minute now. This is the new champ. Spending $31 on the less rare single song makes me feel Chump City all around.
Okay, so first of all, it's not going to be the less rare version because this version's already sold out. The other version is probably never going to sell out. I doubt it's ever going to. No one's going to pay fucking $12 for the less cool version. Yeah. Secondly, this comes with a photography zine, which I'm not a big photography zine guy, but those things are always expensive. They just always, their work is just so much to them that they have to charge insane amounts. I get it. Color printing's, like, especially good color printing's a lot of money. And I respect when people go above and beyond with the 7 inches now, because I'm never, ever going to just buy a brand new 7 inch.
Yeah,
that some band is selling for $8. That is ridiculous. But this is like a keepsake. This is what I was kind of hoping they would have at the actual Dead Guy reunion show. Instead, I just got that stupid tape and I just threw in a box. but yeah, this is pretty cool. I mean, I'm buying it for more for collector's reasons than I am. It is pretty ridiculous at $30 shipped. But, you know, and as far as frivolous purchases go, it doesn't rank too high for me, I don't think.
Our listener Morris actually went to the show, one of the shows in New Jersey, which is, he thinks is going to be one of their last shows for a while. I guess it seems like they're not going to just start touring immediately. And they had a few of their Ripping Corpse themed Dead Guy shirts out there. So I'm hoping those get stuck up on this web store so I can get at least something I might actually use, since I'm not probably ever going to play this. Also this week, I don't know if you got this or not, Mike. Did you buy it? The new Alf figure came out that everyone was talking about. Did you buy one?
Not yet, because I've only seen it, a little nerd talk, but I've seen the pre-order up at Entertainment Earth. Yep. And it's $35, which seems, that's what I would have guessed. Yep. But Entertainment Earth is usually like a few bucks more than most toy sites. And I think they have like a ridiculous like $15 shipping or something. Mm-hmm. So and it's not coming out till October. So I think I have some time. Yeah. To wait for it to pop up on a different site. But I mean, I will eventually pre-order for sure.
Does this toy violate your rule about not buying toys of real people?
Isn't it, Alf is not a real person. I mean, it's a real person in my heart, but no, he's an alien life form. It's okay.
I assume there was a documentary series Alf, and the cartoon was based on
You're bearing the lead though. If this was just a normal Alf figure, I would probably not buy it. But it comes, one of the accessories it comes with many great accessories.
Yes.
But the greatest accessory is a cat sandwich. It's just a live cat between two pieces of bread. And I would have probably paid $35 for that alone. So it's like I'm getting the Alf for free.
It's very strange, too, because Alf is sculpted almost perfectly, but the cat has this weird face, this weird human face on it almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, write to us if you knew what the bag of broccoli was. We figured it out in the Discord. Someone knew what it was right off the top of their head. But, I was like, why does he come with a bag of broccoli? Because I guess I'm not Alf enough.
he also comes with what I like to call podcasting equipment. But that's right. You know, it's just him trying to get back to his home world. But it looks pretty much more or less of what we both use to podcast. So
yeah.
I kind of have to get it to set him up right near me while I podcast.
I want to get one of those like Norelco Razor looking microphones that people are always using when they're talking on a CB in a horror movie or whatever.
Yeah.
That could probably half our full sound. We'll have half sound, but it'd be worth it for me.
I found I was in an antique shop and I found one of those crazy old one of those Shining microphones where she's like trying to call the sheriff. And I was like, you know, maybe Scott would know how to rewire this and he could teach me how to rewire this or something. But I think it was like $40 and I was like, I'm not going to fucking go through that to take one cool picture and be like, this is my podcast setup.
Well, that becomes our header on our Facebook accounts. That microphone with cartoons of us raising one eyebrow. Standing
yeah. last episode, I made a request for people to reach out and give me Oi recommendations for my Oi playlist for my going to soccer games. I am a season ticket holder of Chicago Fire MLS team. And every week I go to the game. I need to get pumped up beforehand. And I think everybody came through tenfold. I had like a full 50 song playlist within a day or two, I think. It was just like, and that was going through it and kicking out the shitty shit. So thanks a lot, everybody. I actually tested it out. I didn't I usually commute by the bus and train, but we actually went with some people, so we drove there, but so I only got to listen to it before the game at my house, just drinking beer, sitting there. It's not the same, but I tweaked it a little. I put like 50 of the Oi songs and then 50 of better songs, better genres of music, and I mixed it and it worked. I'm nerdy when it comes to that stuff, where if listening to a playlist or a mix, if it's too like jarring transitions, I get upset and I don't want to listen to it anymore. But I think I did a good job. And I'll say those Oi songs that I picked, a lot of them I like, you know, genuinely. I think they're genuine good songs. A lot of it is still kind of novelty to me, but I was thinking about it and I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure the people who made those songs, it was a novelty to them too. Like, I don't know the histories of these bands or anything, but just thinking about it, like, because, you know, like the Sex Pistols were kind of a novelty, and then, you know, they're like a manufactured thing.
Yeah.
And they became the Bible for punk rock, even though they're kind of just like, it's kind of like the Brady Bunch, basically, but just, you know, like an evil, trashy version of the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
And, you know, that became the Bible for punk rock. Same thing with Venom and black metal. Like, That's a novelty too, and they didn't take it serious, but everybody else did. So, and those two things are British, so why not a third thing? Why Oi music can be a novelty? I don't know. So some of it's like fun in a novelty way. I think some of it's good music. I've learned that French Oi music is the better strain of Oi music, which is very odd. It's very odd to it's very odd to think that France is like, oh, we have the key to making Oi music great. But every single French suggestion I got, even the ones I didn't include on the playlist, are like, it's all like really good. Like, I don't know what they did, but they just like, they crack the code. Those French, they crack the code when it comes to Oi music. So it's good that now I can be a snob about Oi music and say, no, I only prefer French Oi. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
But
well, hey, you know, of all the working class people and through all of space and time who have ever talked about eating the rich, the French are the ones who actually brought out a guillotine and did it. They have the record.
Yeah. So there you go. Maybe they're the only genuine working class Oi people. So maybe that's why they're so fucking good at it. But yeah, thanks everybody for that list. It sounds great. I can't wait to actually listen to it going to a game. But just
so did you test it out by like marching down the street and pumping your fists and like?
No, I mean, I was just sitting there drinking beers. That's what I usually do. So like, and it worked. Like a few tweaks here and there, but. I filled it out with like some garage, like you said,
UK garage.
Yeah, and some grime, some reggae and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of like soccer anthems, I guess you would say, like Blur's song number 2 is like a big soccer anthem, and a few more of those, and it works out pretty well. A little cheesy, but whatever. My other thing, before I get into my other thing, just to plug our stuff, it's First 7-Inch Club on Instagram. I'm still posting those house pictures. I'm almost caught up with our whole discography of episodes. I didn't do every single one because I don't have addresses for every single one, and some of them are just like the photo is just too bad, and I already have a feeling people are getting sick of this because like I don't know, but either way, so First 7-Inch Club on Instagram, and if you go there, our link tree is set up and you can find all of our other links to our YouTube. Oh, I forgot to shout out the Spotify playlist I was just talking about. That. Yeah, it's on Spotify. If you want to partake in this Oi playlist, it's on Spotify. Just search FSIC Footy Match Day. Like, any of that stuff will bring it up. Just FSIC should bring it up. So if you want to listen to that. But yeah, our YouTube or Instagram, Twitter, whatever else we got. It's all there in that link tree. Our bootleg t-shirt store. Yeah. All that stuff. It's all there.
Yeah, come buy our official. We have one non-bootleg shirt.
So oh, yeah.
Come get that.
Yeah, we have official First 7-Inch Club merch. It's not just Garfield or my cat on a shirt. It's an actual pertaining to the show. So you can pick one of those up if you want. I just wanted to plug that stuff because we're not a real podcast. We don't have sponsors. We don't have to run ads for MeUndies or anything like that.
Yeah.
So my next little segment is a personal, like kind of a personal plea, like my personal ad read is that I've developed a new hobby. I'm old and dying, just like all of us are. We're all dying at a rapid pace, even more rapid than we were a few years ago. Everything's going to shit. Yeah. And I want to do as many hobbies as I can. Like, I don't fucking care if they get big. I pretty much abandoned Retro Food Ghoul, my quickest, most famous thing I've ever done. And I abandoned it like immediately because I just want to do other stuff. Maybe someday we'll get back to that. But so I have a new hobby. It's called gambling. I like to call it winning money, but gambling makes it sound like there's a negative to it, but winning money is a better hobby. But yeah, they made online gambling legal in Illinois. I mean, it was technically legal, but there's like a lot of loopholes, but now you can literally just download an app and go and just get, you're on the ground running, just gambling. So I did that, and they had like a sign-up bonus for, they'd give you $100 if you sign up. I was like, well, bet, I'm never going to lose. So, and you know, you can't cash out the $100 they give you, but they give you $100 to bet. And I'm not losing. I'm winning all the money. I won $40 while I was waiting for fucking Scott to send me the link to get in the podcast room. I'm hot. I got a hot hand. But
this is how I win.
Yeah, pretty much. So they had that sign up bonus, and you know, these apps and websites, all they want you to do is play. They just, you know, they give you all this free money. So I've already gotten a bunch of free money. I don't even want to say it's a lot, but I can get more free money, and that's where you guys come in. If you guys want to take up my new hobby of winning money with me, I have a referral code to FanDuel. I don't know where online betting is legal. I've never been like a big gambler, because like I couldn't do it from my phone before. But you know, this is a whole new world. I think Lotto is the most depressing shit, so I've never done that. But gambling on, you know, on sports, that's fine. I love sports. Yeah. So you get this referral code from FanDuel. If you want it, like I send you my link, and you make a $10 bet, and then you get $100, and I also get $100.
Wow.
And, yeah. And
everybody who signs up, you get $100.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because a few years ago, I famously, in the wrestling world, I had a referral code to Fight TV, which is where all the wrestling pay-per-views were at. And that gave you a lot less than $100 for a referral code. And I made about $2,000 in fake money. So, I mean, Virtual Pros has a way bigger reach than this podcast does. but yeah, man, if you guys want to make some virtual money and you want to, you all you do is win money. Just stick with me. That's all I've been doing. I've had this thing for 2 days. I've won like $150 spending $5 in fake money that I got for free. So all you got to do is I give you that link. You make a $10 real money bet, and then they give you $100. So if this sounds interesting to you, if you are also in Illinois and you haven't signed up yet to change your life by winning money, just hit me up, DM me on fucking Instagram, or email me, or text me, whoever you are, just get a hold and I'll definitely give you that link.
Do you have to know something to make this money, or can you just spin the dice?
I mean, it helps if you have like a remedial, but like it's, you know, they just have so many bets because they want to keep your money. So like what I won $40 waiting for you, because they're like during a basketball game, there's a bet like who's going to score first. And they just put put 10 names down. You just pick a name. And I picked a name with really good odds, and I put $5 down and I won $40 because I was just like, oh, that guy has good odds. Like it's $5 in fake money I lose, but like I also gain 40 if I hit it. So.
All right. Well, I never thought we were going to give out an affiliate link on the show, but I like it.
I don't see it. That's the thing. Like, I think this gives. I got to check with my girlfriend, who I conned into this racket already. But I got to see if this gives you my real ass information, because that's what's keeping me from just posting it everywhere on the internet.
Yeah.
Because I think it might give you my like real shoot name, and I don't even think there's like dear family members that know my real name. So I'm not posting that if that's what happens. But yeah, if you're I will give you a stranger my shoot name for $100. So it works out. That I'm worth doing.
Yeah. 10 pieces of silver to find out Mike's true true handle.
Pretty much. But yeah, outside of that, just besides referral links, please tell your friends about this podcast. I think every episode's getting better and better. I don't know about this episode. This episode might stink. We'll see. But I think every episode's getting better and better, and our listens aren't really going up. They're kind of plateauing already, and that's not good. We need millions and millions of people listening to the show. We're doing very important work here. Mm-hmm. I'm giving out hundreds of dollars with referral links every episode now. So just tell your friends, go to the hardcore show and say, hey man, get on the mic and say, hey man, go listen to First Seven Inch Club on Spotify and iTunes, and It'll change your life.
I mean, if this works out, this should be our podcast, is you giving out sports gambling tips. And I'll learn to do that with the radio guy, sports guy voice. And we'll just swear and talk about boobs and whatever else you do on those shows.
Those things are probably more successful than talking about dusty old records no one cares about. I'm pretty sure that's more successful. Okay, I guess we get on with the show. This record we're talking about today is a band called Ochre, and the record is called Dive Down Deep Nine, and it's all one word, so it's very annoying. This record came out in 1995 on Fight Records. Ochre was around for this record and a demo, and then they had a posthumous split 7-inch with Left 4 Dead, which is the only reason anybody knows Ochre. That's the only reason I know of them. They're very privileged to release a split 7-inch with Left 4 Dead, and it's the only Left 4 Dead record I've never owned, so that was a big blind spot for me. I think I've at least at one point owned the rest of them, even multiple versions of them, but I've since sold them off. But that Ochre 7-inch, Ochre Left 4 Dead 7-inch, I never owned. But yeah, that's what interested me in the 7-inch. This was like a poll I put in Facebook and in our Facebook group, Facebook for 7-inch club disrespecters and appreciators. That failed miserably. It was very, very low turnout at the polls for
people want to talk about OI all day, but they don't want to vote.
In my history, people love clicking on stuff, even if they know nothing about it. So I was kind of shocked because I love clicking on stuff. I see four things listed. I'm going to click on one, even though I don't know anything about it. So very disappointed. So I don't think we're ever going to have one of these again. This is going to be no more democratic choices in for 7-inch club. That was your first and last. But yeah, this one out. So we're talking about this week. This band was very short lived. I basically found a blog post that sums it up way better than I ever could. I will say there's a lot of, I guess, misinformation and fake news about this band for some reason. If you go to their Discogs and if you go a few other places, it'll say that Mike from Fight Records, Mike Fight, it says he was the bassist for this band, and he never played bass for this band. I don't know why it says that, but there's multiple sources that say that. The deal is with Mike and Fight is that Mike from Fight Records moved to California from Georgia, and he became the roommate of the guy who would eventually sing for Ochre. And so for me personally, I always thought Fight Records, or at least a little while, was based in Georgia, but I did the research, even though we already talked about Fight Records, and this has always been in California. But I just always thought it was a Georgia thing because that Sleepless Nights comp being very Georgia based. It's always been Santa Barbara. So he moved with the guy who would later sing for Ochre. And the reason Mike ended up being in the band is because Ochre broke up after about a year or so. And they had three songs they recorded with no vocals, and Rob left, I guess, and had no interest in doing it. And I guess Mike had this opportunity to put out this new chokehold band, Left 4 Dead, but they only had a few handful of songs too. And so he decided to take those leftover Ochre songs and sing over them. I think it's him and somebody else sang over them. And two people sang over them, and they put it out on the split, the Left 4 Dead Ochre split. The only reason anybody knows Ochre, I guess, outside of California. And the general consensus is that is their worst shit. And this 7-inch we're going to talk about today is the good shit. This blog post, Shiny Gray Monotone, goes as far as saying it's seriously crucial. Spoiler alert, I do not agree with that, but maybe to somebody else, it's crucial. These guys were based out of Santa Barbara, which is, Southern California, so they were a part of that whole emo and screamo scene. And it says that this Shiny Gray Monotone blogspot says that Rob had just formed a band with some guys who were alumni of other bands with the intent of stirring up a local scene that was maybe possibly crawling up its own ass in the dark days of screamo, paperback 7-inch covers and dialers. I guess Ochre was started to be like, yeah, we're shocking. We're going to disrupt the scene. He goes on to say, they were kind of hardcore power violence with with influences like No Comment and Neanderthal and I Hate God. I guess this guy probably has a better bands of list than Discogs has. So he says Jeff was the guitarist, and he was in Embassy, Manumission, who was a good ebullition band, and future member of Uphill Battle, which we've played with. I assume it's the same Uphill Battle. Broken Needle and Blasting Concepts, many others. Mike Locke was a second guitarist. He was also in Embassy. And then he was in Incurable Complaint. Brian Tamborillo on drums, also from Embassy. So this is mostly a band called Embassy. And Cabe. And Cabe was, I guess, the bassist. He was also in Embassy, I guess. So that was it. These guys were all in a band called Embassy before this. And they started this band to be like the guys to show up to show and fuck everything up and bum everybody out. Yeah. And that's pretty much the history I've gleaned, because there's a lot of bands named Ochre, and it's a more common word than I would have ever guessed before doing this podcast.
Yeah. The guy who wrote that zine, I don't know if you mentioned it, but the guy who wrote that blog entry is the other singer.
Yeah. That's great. I did forget to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah. Shiny Gray Monotone is his blog, and he has a couple blogs, and he is very actively a music reviewer in 2021 or 2022. He's like writes long personal music reviews on that blog, and I guess it was a whole thing at some point. That's kind of, you know, because nobody really reads blogs anymore. I assume it's a vanishing opportunity. But yeah, he's the other singer, and he makes no apologies about it not being very good, that he just jumped in because he wanted to do it. Why not? And he is an active commenter anywhere Ochre does come up about about his time. I mean, he seems pretty thick-skinned about it. This band, I think these guitarists have kind of a knack for doing stuff weird ways, because they are in a lot of bands where it fits a genre, but it's a little weird. Like Embassy, have you ever listened to Embassy?
Nope. The only band out of all those I've heard is Uphill Battle and Manumission.
Embassy is very cool. They're like kind of like a noisy San Diego-y unwound kind of unwound. I don't know how you say unwound or unwound. Kind of noisy stuff, but also screamo. So like, I don't know if like a ebullition band was way weirder, like way stranger and almost a little bit poppy while also screaming. If people like any of the stuff we always talk about, they're going to like Embassy. They should listen to it.
Yeah.
Incurable Complaint, same way. It's really heavy, screaming music, but also has these fancy, like shreddy guitar parts tucked into it here and there that nobody asked for. So they're just screaming, and then all of a sudden the guitars go up and down, and it's good. It's cool. Brian got to be in The Boredoms, but it's kind of a cheat because it's one of those Boedrum records where everybody is on them. That's hundreds of drummers. So I think I'm on one of those. I don't know. Everyone can be on that. I learned the Steve Aoki tidbit because Jeff from this band was in a band called Become, who put out a tape on Extinction Burst, and it's kind of Revolution Summer stuff, but also above average. Like everything these guys do fits a genre, but it's a little bit better than the stuff they did. Manumission is really good. But Manumission, I was excited for a second because for my whole life, I always have the same little blip of problem in my brain where I confuse Manumission and Man Lifting Banner. And they're totally unrelated, like absolutely unrelated bands. Yeah. But Man Lifting Banner would have greenlit me to talk about my favorite dumb straight edge record, which is Cult Turkey, the communist straight edge record that they put out. but of course I'm wrong, so I don't get to talk about that. And so these guys have done a lot of stuff. Like those two in particular, the two guitarists have done a lot. And they're also pretty committed to the screamy, chaotic hardcore life. They put out a fucking ton of this kind of screamy music, and it's kind of a strange. Uphill Battle, yes, we played with them. I also played with them you remember Andrew, what's his name? Andrew Emo, we called him. He had other names. He had a terrible dirt spider basement, and he booked Uphill Battle and Dysrhythmia with us. And they're both bands who I think go off.
Yeah.
So in his awful, dirty basement, he laid down a shitty little tarp, and these bands went off, and you couldn't breathe, and it was horrible. And Dysrhythmia is instrumental, I think, but I confused them both. I don't remember which was which, and I hate instrumental metal bands, so I hate Uphill Battle because of that that night. And all these guys are still out there on social media. Brian is in a band called Psychic Ills that I think is pretty like New York City psychedelic hipster stuff. I don't really like it. Couldn't track down Cabe. Rob is he Rob, the old singer, left hardcore behind, as far as I can tell. He does photography zines, speak of the devil. He does photography and photography zines, and he also does, like, you know, web design stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, the things I read, there's definitely a couple barbs, like, you know, Rob turned his back on the scene.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know if that's, like, sarcastic and joking around, or these dudes are actually pissed that
I don't know, because
pursued
still
a real career. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're still friends.
So it's probably sarcastic, though.
Yeah, it's bullshit. one thing I will say is, if you can track down Jeff Capra's account, his Facebook account, I don't think he interacts with it much, but everybody tags him in things, and he's been in so many good bands. It is like a treasure trove of old photos and flyers and just stuff that people just post and stick in his account. So if you can find his account, definitely worth looking at. And then, like I said, the singer who's on the Left 4 Dead split is out there, and he's a very active old school internetsman. So if you want to read, it goes on beyond what Mike said, like that description goes on for another whole page and a half to talk about.
It's very small font, and I thought I was going to be able to read it, but it's too much for me with all this new equipment I'm working with right now. I don't know.
You should try to read his top 10 of 2021. It's like 30 pages long, and it has multiple top 10s nested inside of it. It's a lot.
As I said, this was on Fight Records, and we've already talked about Fight Records on the Thence Forward episode, so if you'd like to hear that. But I guess just to go over their highlights, is they released a lot of good stuff. Fight Records is probably more modernly known for being the home to Good Clean Fun, because Mike was actually in Good Clean Fun. And so a lot of their later releases are Good Clean Fun stuff. Early on, they released Thence Forward, which we talked about. They released the famous John Birch Conspiracy Theory Botch record that put them on the map. They released Eyelid. And, you know, obviously they released the not only the Left 4 Dead discography, but the Left 4 Dead Ochre split. And that's why everybody knows them.
Yeah, we already talked about this label. And I mentioned back then that I thought he was from Syracuse all the way until we did that review. So I'm not an authority. I'm no one who should talk about Fight Records. I don't know if anybody else likes it, but I like that Countervail record that's on there. That's really gross, heavy, like stupid metalcore. And I'm a pretty big fan of it after digging it up.
I guess something I never talked about when last time we did it is they also put out a band called Daltonic, which was from Boston. But I think the dude, Fernando, who booked the tune in when I was a kid in Connecticut, loved Daltonic, and I feel like they played there every fucking week, because I just assumed they were from Connecticut after a while. So, so Fight did that.
Yeah, I thought Daltonic was like a side project of a rapper. I think I confused it with something else.
Yeah, I think you did. I think you confused it with Deltron or something.
That's probably it.
We can get right into the packaging of this bad boy. And I was thinking, I completely forgot, we've gone 37 episodes, and I can't believe I haven't thought of, like, a cool catchphrase for this part, where, like how Steve MRE 1989 will say, hey, let's get this out on a tray.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, I don't have anything like that, so I think I am just going to steal, let's get this 7-inch record out on a tray right now, and talk about the packaging.
Nice.
So this is a very inopportune time to be reviewing this record, because it's all kind of Russian imagery, like faux Russian. It's that font that was very popular in the late 90s to early 2000s. I don't know what it's called, but it's like there's basically one universal, how kind of like there's that Chinese takeout font. There's there's a Russian version of that, of like fake Cyrillic that just uses, you know, actual English Roman letters. So it has like the O with instead of the line over the top, it has the bottom, and it's kind of like, you know what I'm talking about when you say Russian font. It's like everybody knows. But this layout is like super clean for 1995. It's kind of like super ahead of its time, even with the Russian imagery, because, like I said, people didn't start really going hard on that until like the late 90s, early 2000s. So they beat everybody the punch. I mean, it's a very simple layout. It's basically just typeface, and then there's a, you know, like a cut and paste, not cut and paste. Oh, maybe actually, yeah, it's made on a computer. It probably was cut and paste. Some cut and paste tanks. And that's pretty much it. Just very simple. It's on red paper. There's diagrams of tanks, and I think they're a little ahead of their time on that, because I don't think diagrams in hardcore music really got big until 1997 or so. So they got that going on. It's very uniform with the actual record and record label. They have the tanks on there with the Russian writing. I lost the ad, but there was an ad. Oh, there it is. Yeah, there's a Fight Records ad for the Thence Forward record that we reviewed already, the Sleepless Nights comp, which I gushed over in that Thence Forward episode. And a thing I wish I knew about, well, I mean, I knew they existed, but I never got an ad for them, was a God-Free Youth t-shirt.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, in 1995, I was definitely very afraid of ordering over the mail, so I wouldn't have ordered it. But, man, was it $9? $9 postpaid for a God-Free Youth t-shirt. I would have loved that. I think I just wrote God-Free Youth on my jacket.
But, oh, yeah. as soon as I heard that phrase, I needed it.
Yeah. It says the front of this says God is just another addiction, though, and I never saw that.
Actually, there's a version of the shirt that has botch on the other side. So botch, I guess, just took the slogan. I mean, they're on the label, but they just took that slogan and put it on the back of one of their own shirts.
Yeah, I haven't seen that since we started doing the podcast. I haven't seen that pop up on any of those retro t-shirt sites yet, but maybe it'll pop up. But yeah, it's a pretty cool shirt. I would have definitely killed for it as a kid. This layout is super clean. It's super nice. I don't know if I would immediately know what to expect by it, because this kind of layout and design wasn't really popping in 1995. So I don't know. It looks nice. Oh, I forgot to mention, it also says on the back, recorded during the summer of 1995 by Michael Roth on a Macintosh computer, which blew my mind, because I did not know you could record a band on one of those mid-90s Macs. Like, I've been thinking about it since I read that. I just don't know how that would work. I don't even know if it's a joke. I don't know if this is sarcastic or something. It's just a joke, because, you know, the recording sounds very good for non-studio recording. So if that's true, this Michael Roth character had a very nice Macintosh computer, because we had, in my school, we had like random Macintoshes. Like, you would just walk in a room and there would be one, and you'd be like, oh, a computer, because, you know, you didn't have them at home yet. And you'd like go and try and do something on it, and it was just like, you know, it probably had like 10 megabytes of memory. Like, you can't really do much. So thinking about recording like a whole demo or anything on one of those Macintoshes is insane to me. But, you know, Scott's a computer man, so maybe he could go into more detail about the recording process. But yeah, a super clean layout, super nice. It's definitely ahead of its time. I think it's an A+ for this packaging.
Literally every designer, no exceptions, everyone who had a hack copy of Photoshop or Ready, Set, Go or Quark Express, whatever, hoped beyond hope that a band would come to them asking for a communist propaganda layout. We all really wanted to do that. We all wanted to use that font. We all wanted to use red and black as hard as we could. I think most of us were picturing like the lithographs, you know, like Lenin pointing toward the future, or like an Art Deco guy with a hammer, woodcut of a guy swinging a hammer. Ochre is like, fuck it, tanks. We're going to do tanks. And I don't know enough about tanks to even know if these are significant tanks or if they're just tanks. There's a tank that's so futuristic they couldn't draw it on here. The last one just says artist representation, and it's just like a stick figure drawing of a tank. So I think they're onto something. There was something going on in this era with bands just sticking numbers into things, like everything was a gun or a graffiti tag. And even after reading the lyrics, I'm not sure what Dive Down Deep 9 means. I don't actually know what that is referring to. It doesn't seem to relate to the lyrics. It seems to be just a tag, like a tagger, like a graffiti tag or something. The computer thing is amazing, because this era, I think this is around the time that Motorola was putting out fake Macs. You could get these, I forget what they were called, PowerPC. They had a name. There was like a couple names for them, but there were these fake. It was the only time that Apple let other people put out Macintosh computers. I think you could even call it a Macintosh computer because it was running the Macintosh software. So it's possible that this guy got a deal and was able to record this this 7-inch still in an affordable fashion. But I don't know what kind of hardware you needed, and I certainly don't know what kind of software was. I assume Pro Tools was around, something like that, but kids didn't have it. There was some ways to get stuff. I don't know if Hotwire was around back then. There was ways to get pirated software, but it wasn't that easy. I guess Usenet, you would do it through Usenet or something. I think a lot of these guys went on to pursue visual careers. Like we said, one of them is a photography guy. I think one of them is a web designer. I think another one is a graphics guy. So typesetting this entire record in that fake commie font and squishing up the tank graphic on the label, that's two crimes they have to answer for. When they go to graphic design heaven, they have to explain themselves why they let that go. But I think like this record's above critique, because it's just so simple. It's like red and black, like the supremacist color scheme or whatever. There's nothing to critique. It's fine. It's It's adequate. It's fine. And like Mike said, I really wish I had that shirt. I'm kind of mad. I want to. I'm just gonna, maybe we'll just make it. We'll just make it and put it in the store.
Fuck it. What are they going to do? Sue us? I forgot it also says in the thanks, it says Ochre sends a hearty fuck you to the new Christian straight edge right.
Hell yeah.
Which I don't know if that was a real thing or some kind of in joke because I mean, I don't know, 1995, and I don't know what was going on in 1995 in California. So maybe there was a big, I guess, you know, I guess Tooth and Nail is from that area. I started watching a documentary on Tooth and Nail the other day, but I fell asleep, so I couldn't get the whole story. Maybe that'll explain it, though.
Let's Google Zao band and see.
There's one of those, Living Sacrifice. I didn't know that band has been around since 1990, which
is well, Zao is 93, Living Sacrifice is old, and then Training for Utopia I think is older than we think.
I guess
West,
so.
But they're from West Virginia. Like, these are bands that are not from California, so they would have been on everybody's radar back then.
I just always thought all that Jesus shit came from California, I guess. I don't know what I'm talking about, but so anybody, old people from Southern California, Santa Barbara, let us know if there's a big straight edge religious movement going on in the mid 90s, because I definitely did not know about it. But
maybe
we
never heard about it because Ochre won.
Yeah,
they got them one record.
They disrupted the scene and they scared everybody with their communist propaganda layout, and that was the end of the Christian right. this record is 5 tracks. Don't get your hopes up yet. It's not full sound. It sounds like it's full sound with 5 whole tracks, but they're very short tracks. It's one of those things where it's 4 tracks on one side and 1 track on the second side, which is always a caution, danger, warning sign for any 7-inch record, because it means something's gone awry and something's going to be wacky or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get into that. The first track is called Love Sweet Love. Like I said before, this sounds very good for a computer recording. Just think about the first computer you had, and try to think about, especially if you're young, think about like what bands sound like now. And try and think about getting that sound out of whatever fucking compact presario you use to play Oregon Trail on or whatever. And you know, this is that Macintosh is probably older than that, so it's pretty insane how good this sounds for I mean, even like studio recording sounded like shit back then, so it's pretty impressive. This is the gray monotone guy. I mean, I think his description is pretty spot on. This sounds like a mosh metal band trying to play like West Coast Power Violence, even more like a New Attack Unra, like that crust core stuff. And so I didn't do research before I listened to this. Well, I didn't do like a ton of research. And I was still like Scott, under the assumption that Mike from Fight Records was A, in the band, and B, still lived on the East Coast. And so I was like, there's an East Coast, like, so I didn't look up where Ochre was from. So I was like, man, there's an East Coast band playing something like this in 1995. That's insane. They must have went on like a summer trip to California and discovered this magical music.
Eat, Pray, Love.
But no, it was just an actual California band. So. I get it. They I'm sure like the kind of moshiness to this music is kind of a joke, where they're just like, ha, we're showing these fucking emo fuckers we're playing this mosh music. But to me, it's not a joke. This is real life to me. This is fucking hardcore reality to me. This moshy music. So it's cool, like, cause it's like, you know, it's the best of both things I would come to love in 1997. It is just straight up mosh, and then fucking just like kind of those power violence-y crusty tones, and it's not as advanced as anything that I personally listen to, so it's not like something It's not like I put this on and I was like, whoa, like my mind was blown and I wanted to listen to all of it. But if this was 1995 still, I would have definitely dug this song. Yeah. The one thing I wasn't too into is that the vocals sound distant and not in a way I like, because I usually like that. But it definitely sounds like this was pushing the limitations of the Macintosh they were recording on, because it sounds like they could. I don't know if he was just using like I don't even know what kind of mic he was using, but it sounds like. The singer,
PC mic.
Yeah, it sounds like the singer could only get to a certain volume, no matter how hard he screamed, and didn't sound like a personal choice for in the mix. It just sounded like this was the limit of volume he could hit, and that kind of brings it down. But I mean, 1995 still, it sounds great. I just wish there was a more like chaotic upfront singer for this band. Yeah.
A few minutes ago, I said how these dudes are all in bands where the execution is fancy and weird compared to everything else. And this record kind of makes me a liar, because this is very plain.
Yeah.
Very straightforward. The two things I thought had going for it, I kind of dig these vocals because he sounds like when the IT guy loses his biscuit at a meeting, like, you know, like when the guy who's quiet finally just like loses it and he stands up and rants about the refrigerator or the pay scheme at work or something, and it gets weird and it's a bad scene. I like that the distorted bass gets a lot of room on this, because it didn't seem like there was a lot of that was going on a lot back then. It's always a badass sound when you let the distorted bass ring out a little bit. This record came out the same year as Fixation, so I'm not making any accusations, but when I hear the swaggering beat and the distorted bass, I always think of Dead Guy. That's like a thing they did a lot on Fixation. So it like, I don't mind that. I like that sound. We heard from the singer Gray, the other singer Gray, that the band was trying to be aggressive and mosh. They wanted to mosh.
Yeah.
That's literally what he said. This song does those things. So job done. They did those two things. I would have loved it at 17, but at 90, I need more bells and whistles than this. I need more sparkle. I need more other stuff, but I do think it's funny when an aggressive song just has random dies thrown into it. Die! Like, because that also adds to the stressed office man vibe. Yeah. This just the guy who just runs out of language and just has to tell people, fuck off, die, fuck off and die.
The next song is called Razor at Wrist Memories. This is the variant, the faster blast beat song. Blast beat's a controversial subject on for 7-inch Club, but I believe this is a blast beat. This is the faster blast beat variant of Power Violence. Mm-hmm. And it could have used an epic mosh part like Left 4 Dead would use, but I don't think that tech was created yet. So it's just kind of just a blast beat and then a little tiny mosh part. Not too much. Like Scott just said about this, this would have been fine in 1995 and 2022. It's just kind of a song.
Yeah.
But this is probably the song where they were like, oh, wait, we did a band that sounded like this new Left 4 Dead band. We can be on the split. So I could see where they made that relation with this track.
I was hoping that this song was indicating that they were going to kind of kind of be cramming as much life as they could into the record, like just filling in all the cracks with ideas. Cause that's what this sounds like. This sounds like a sketch of a song. Like here's my two parts. Mm. Let's add a bridge to it or do something else later, but we'll record it now, so I don't forget it. That's what this sounds like. I forget what episode it was, but a while back we talked about the era when all of hardcore people wanted to sound evil.
Mm-hmm.
When evil became a sound, and it was a descriptor that people used a lot, the way people use like secret guy and stuff like that. It's like evil hardcore, evil or scary hardcore is what everyone call it, I guess. And, you know, I think this song kind of dabbles in that with the nonsense serial killer suicide kind of thing they're going. I don't even know what the song's about, but it says watch your back and it indicates suicide in the song title. So it's giving me the 90s evil guy indigestion vibe that I kind of like don't love that. Do we consider a record as having full sound if the songs sound this 11th hour? I don't know. I think it goes downhill. Spoiler, it goes downhill from here, I think. This is probably the last hurrah at dashing out a quick idea in under a minute. And then we take a journey after that.
Yeah. Scott might have a little more specificity. I don't even know if that's a word. Mm-hmm. With these two tracks, but I lumped them together. The next two tracks are called Crisis / Earth. And Gravedigger. The reason I am combining these two is because they are just two speed bursts of songs. They're like two 30-second speed bursts of guys going da-da-da-da-da drums and one guy going bah, and that's the song. Yeah. It brought me back to a simpler time when it was more common for bands to do this. Mm-hmm. It was more common for bands to make a whole band out of doing this.
Yeah.
And I think that's died, because I think I mentioned it in a past episode, but the stuff that people call power violence now, It's not your granddad's power violence, that's for sure. It's just like people just use it's that term has become like screamo now, I've learned, where it's just like when bands want to sound like not like they just don't want to say hardcore, I guess. They want to add some depth to what they're doing. They just say it's power violence.
Yep.
But this is what power violence would have meant to me in the mid to late 90s, is what these guys are doing on these two tracks. I don't love it. I think it's kind of bullshit, but they're just recording this over the summer on some guy's computer, and luckily they have a friend that runs a record label so they could put it out. But these two songs definitely sound like two bullshit joke songs to me.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. You're supposed to have like the Blearg record or the...
Yeah.
You're supposed to have like 40 songs on 7-inch. That thrill missed me. I didn't like it even as a young man. And, you know... You Suffer by Napalm Death is like 10 years old by the time, or something like that, by the time this record came out. That's a 1 second song. You're not going to top that. The joke is done. They did it. They put out they got an MTV, I think. You can't beat that. It's like 1 or 2 seconds. But you know, I get it. That's like a West Coast thing. I think it's cool that the first song, Crisis, ends on an interesting riff. Like they wrote a riff. It's pretty good. They could have played it 4 more times and then it might've been a song. Just that's how you do a song.
Yeah.
Just play that good part again. And then the Gravedigger ends with a tasty double bass that I thought was going to go someplace. It doesn't. They're both, I think both songs are less than 20 seconds long. So you kind of want those thrills to go on a little bit longer. They don't. And also Gravedigger is not about a monster truck, which is a disappointment.
No. So then we flip the side to the single track on side B. It's not as long as I expected. I definitely expected them to go all full, like 6 minutes and 12 seconds or whatever it is for a full 7-inch sound, but it's not, it's only a few minutes. And as Scott and I have been saying, the lyrics so far have been vague. It seems they're aggressive and angry at a, you know, a mysterious entity that we're not sure of. But I know what Quotile Ultimatum, the first track on, or the only track on side B, I know exactly what that's about.
Yep.
This is about Yar's Revenge, which was an Atari game back, you know, back when we were little kids.
Yep.
And finally, someone has written a song about Yar's Revenge, one of my favorite Atari games.
Yeah.
It sucks that they did this with such a basic setup, because Yar's Revenge is known basically for having some of the coolest sound effects in like the history of video games. Not anymore. Like now you fucking put full CDs, full albums on video games. But back in the day, Yar's Revenge had the coolest sound effects on Atari and even going into other console generations. So it sucks that they couldn't actually use sound effects from Yar's Revenge, because that would have really made the song for me. Mm-hmm. So this is basically the, hey, we're going to play Black Sabbath riff song. Again, this is a couple years ahead of its time. I think this came pretty much became in vogue later on, a couple years later. So I'll give them credit for that. They're probably thinking they're doing something a little unique for 1995, because a lot of people didn't go into their grandpa's record collections yet and find out that Black Sabbath was actually cool. Because, you know, I didn't, in 1995, I definitely didn't know Black Sabbath was cool. I thought it was old man music, so they're a little ahead of their time with that. But unfortunately, you know, I'm always a sucker for the Black Sabbath slow riff song. I like slow music. I loved any time a band would do this. That's why kind of like why I liked A New Attack so much, is because they would slip into this every other song. But this song kind of goes nowhere, and it's like this is the one song they probably should have edited. It's not long, and all the other songs are short. But this is like, it's kind of like, after that first minute and a half or so, it's just like they run out of ideas and they run out of riffs and they're just kind of playing whatever. It's, you know, it's a pox on the name of Yar's Revenge, one of the greatest Atari games of all time. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it's kind of a fun joke song, I guess. Well, not a joke, but, you know, it's a fun song about a video game. You wouldn't expect that from a serious, aggressive hardcore band. So I liked it for its theme and at least the first half of it, but I kind of wish this song stuck the landing, and it kind of didn't.
Yeah, this is dumb. This is I would dial it back. I would say, you know, because the opening riff has kind of like almost like a Venom kind of cock rock sound going for it. Like it could have gone into like a 1-2 beat and been kind of something else. But then it just goes on this endless stoner rock journey. It's only a few minutes long, and I just don't care about anything.
Yeah.
It's cool that they were yelling over it. I don't think, because I Hate God was around for a while by then.
Yeah.
I was assuming maybe this was a joke because it's the side B, and side B of My War is famously a weird stoner record. So yeah. Maybe that was the bit. I respect the singer for trying to keep that aggression up while singing about Yar's Revenge, because you can hear that he's singing Atari, you know, goofy Atari lyrics. You can hear that he's kind of flagging because it's hard to keep it up when you're singing about the Zorlon beam and the Quotal and Yar's himself. It's kind of silly, and you know, like that's a whole side of your record. Like if you guys are an angry. If you guys are making this communist font and you got all this anger to get out, why did you waste this whole side of a record? This is another careful what you wish for thing, because I'm bitching about all those short songs. I may probably have taken 10 short songs on this side rather than this one like pointless long song.
Yeah.
this goofy biker rock. Not even stoner, it's like biker rock parody.
Yeah, overall, I thought this was kind of just a fun, kids having fun record, even though I guess they had a motive to destroy the scene and ruin emo kids' lives, which I could also respect.
Yeah.
So I get it. My rating system for these things is usually throw it in the trash, just stream it, buy it in those bargain bins, buy it for full price or buy it for collector's prices. I honestly never thought I would do the just stream it option. I just made that up in the last few episodes, and I just did it so I could have five because I felt uncomfortable only having four choices. Mm-hmm. And but this is a totally just stream it record. I don't think it's complete trash, because if you are into that same strain of power violence-y kind of hardcore and the stuff like Left 4 Dead or even like they said Neanderthal, I Hate God, A New Attack, UNRWA, any of that stuff. This is kind of like, you know, what one of the first, not, I'm not going to say they're one of the first bands to do it, but there's definitely a very early version of that sound. And so if you are into that stuff, it's kind of a curiosity piece. I don't agree with Gray Monotone saying this is crucial. maybe it's crucial if you are from the Santa Barbara scene. Maybe this was kind of mind-blowing in 1995. But it's more of a curiosity for me. So I would say just stream it if you are interested in any band mentioned.
Yeah, this is totally contextual. Like in 1995, like these guys, their mission statement was to bring ruckus and I guess fight dialers, which is a fun. every other band these guys did, I think, was more interesting and sincere. So they might have just needed to get this off their chest. We just need to like do something kind of thuggish and dumb. They have two guitarists for no reason. I guess maybe power and volume, but there's they never play anything different. They don't drift apart at all, at least that I heard. I don't think I ever heard them do a lead or a harmony or noise. Like, they didn't even really play noise. They just played riffs. And I guess if at the time, if everyone around them was doing like abstract, chimey emo stuff and chaotic screamo and making a lot of noise, and these guys are just like, let's just play Pantera style. Let's just play like with one finger and like just really strip it down to power chords and just like simple. Maybe that is disruptive. Maybe it is disruptive to just play down and down, 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 which is like regular old shit. You know, the whole second side being kind of an extended joke. We live in a world now that it's so far beyond the safe limits of stoner rock saturation and decay. Like, we're past it. Yeah. We're to the part where it's decaying now. So
it's kind of like in at this time. In the late 90s, I was wishing for more griefy, stonery stuff.
Yeah.
And I was also wishing for more zombie stuff. And I got too much of both.
Yeah.
And now I'm sick of both things.
Yeah, there's no way to put my head back in the space where I wanted to hear a sleazy metal song about Yar's revenge. But I could see it being unexpected and fun. I think when I was, because I liked stuff like that. When I was young, I think I would have been like, oh, that's so funny that the whole second side is this.
Yeah.
Whatever. But now I'm an old man. So I think this whole record falls kind of flat. I want more sprinkles on my ice cream. They don't give me enough. But I can't rate this lower than 24th Solution, because there's no way. Like, this is not, this is more sincere. This is more, or not sincere, but more of an item than 24th Solution.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give them 2.9 Zorlon cannons out of 5.
There you go. You're not the worst. You made the cut. Next week, I should finally be getting one of Matto's records in. I don't even know if Matto still listens, because he was frequently commenting on all the episodes, and then he just stopped. So maybe we said something to really piss Matto off. But we will hopefully be getting to one of Matto's records next week. Like I said, First 7-Inch Club on Instagram, First 7-Inch Club on everything else. But on the Instagram, you could see the scans. You could see my silly flyer scans, my silly record scans, people doxing people's apartments. It's a real fun time. I'm putting a lot of content into that Instagram. A lot more content than I need to. So give me a reason to keep sticking up with this content before I get into some other weird hobby like, gambling. Oh, I forgot. If you want to make some money, hit me up for a referral link. I'll give you 100 virtual dollars. It'll happen. But until then, we'll talk to you next week.
A long time ago, I promised that I was going to become an expert on sports, that I was going to dedicate myself. Now that there's a fiscal need, maybe this is my chance.
There you go.